The theologian Catherine Keller begins a short book that sets out to explain the notoriously complex theological approach called process theology with a simple story. When she was barely five, my niece Jennifer took me for a walk in her neighborhood. "Come this way, Catherine," she said, with a dramatic air of hushed excitement, wielding a stick like a magnifying glass, poking and probing beneath the shrubs along the sidewalk. She handed me a pebble, and then a petal, to examine for myself, as though for clues. "What are we looking for, Jennifer?" "We're on the mystery," she exclaimed. It's a charming story, not just because it's a cute kid being innocent and excited about the world, although that's good. I think it's a charming story to us more because we long to live in a world of wonder and mystery, a world that it seems that that youngster is living in. We long for wonder and mystery. Or at least this seems to be a particularly Unitarian Universalist way of understanding human beings and human nature and what we're looking for. People can live more fully, more wholly, more resiliently, with more excitement when we can live on the mystery. But I've been wondering, what kind of a guide is mystery when it comes to encountering one another or being in relationship with one another? What kind of a guide is mystery when it comes to thinking about other people? So mystery is really important to Unitarian Universalists. I learned this again, or this was kind of emphasized for me this past summer at General Assembly. As you may have heard me say from this pulpit before, the big focus of General Assembly this past summer was on a proposal for new language to describe who we are as Unitarian Universalists, language that would supplant the language of seven principles and six sources that over the past 40 years has become very beloved. But we Unitarian Universalists pride ourselves on being an open and evolving tradition. Our hymnals are named Singing the Living Tradition and Singing the Journey. Even a century ago, in 1921, the dean of Rider Divinity School in Chicago, which was a Universalist seminary, wrote a book to describe what Universalism was as a religion and where it's headed. These are the first sentences of his book. "Universalists are often asked to tell where they stand. The only true answer to give to this question is that we do not stand at all. We move. We are a faith tradition very much in tune with the words written in stone before the threshold of Northshire Bookstore on Broadway. Nothing is written in stone. So it makes sense that we UUs feel a call to take into account 40 years and more of learning and journeying and reimagine how we understand who we are and what we are about in a way that feels more in tune with the times or more helpful, more in a way that looks towards a vital tomorrow. We're open to change. And yet, the study commission, when they presented this draft of new language, they left out something that the delegates brought right back. So as UUs, if you've been in the UU game for any length of time, you've heard about seven principles. You probably have heard about six sources. They don't get as much press, which I've always thought was a shame. But one of the things that this study commission that was charged with reimagining this statement, they took a look at and thought this is problematic. They said, well, Unitarian Universalism is an open faith tradition. We're looking everywhere for inspiration. So numbering the sources of inspiration or just coming up with a list seems like an inadequate way to address what we're actually inspired by or to describe where we actually get our inspiration from. a list is awkward and limiting, and some of the ways you describe what the items are on the list, that was kind of a problem too. So instead of a list, they came up with a very simple statement. They proposed this to the delegates last summer. Here's where we find our inspiration. As Unitarian Universalists, we draw upon and are inspired by sacred and secular understandings that help us live into our values. Pretty simple. But instead of letting that stand, the delegates changed it to bring back words from the first of the six sources. Those words are about mystery and wonder. And they didn't just bring them back. So in the six sources, we call them the six sources and the seven principles. There aren't actually any numbers by any of this stuff. We just number them. But when they brought back this language, they actually said that these mystery and wonder are primary experiences. That word is actually in this new language that the delegates brought in. So here's what the new words are after the delegates got through with it. Direct experiences of transcending mystery and wonder are primary sources of Unitarian Universalist inspiration. These experiences open our hearts, renew our spirits, and transform our lives. We draw upon and are inspired by sacred, secular, and scientific understandings that help us make meaning and live into our values. These sources ground us and sustain us in ordinary, difficult, and joyous times. Embracing mystery and wonder are key, primary, to Unitarian Universalism. So I've been wondering about mystery and wonder. I really respond to the idea that we should be open to mystery and wonder. I think one of the reasons it's especially important at this time of year to reflect on our relationship to darkness and the dark is because the dark can be such a source of mystery that we can get frightened, and one of the things that giving in to fear does is that it closes us off from mystery and wonder. But what's been frightening me more than literal darkness lately is, frankly, other people. I cannot process the horror and violence of violation of humans and humanity that people are practicing now in the conflict between Israel and Hamas in the Middle East. It is a mystery to me how any person can act with such violence toward any other person. It is a mystery how any person might resign themselves to such violence. And my fears don't stop there. It's a mystery to me why some people find so attractive bigotry and vindictiveness and meanness and xenophobia and white supremacist Christian nationalism that the most recent former president may be able again to turn it into a path to power and elected office. This is a mystery to me. And yet, it seems to me, feeling that, perhaps there are some kinds of mysteries that should not be honored. But mystery can be such a helpful tool to open ourselves up. If we look at other people as mysteries, mysteries to be respected, to be listened to, wouldn't that change the way we relate to one another? Wouldn't that change things? When the Buddhist teacher Deborah Eden Tull was working on her wedding vows with her husband, she turned to a fellow Buddhist teacher and writer named Joanna Macy for some help, for some advice. And Tull says that Macy suggested that we make a vow to remember to meet one another as the mystery. Tull says that for her and her husband, this has meant being committed to perceiving one another with openness, curiosity, and beginner's mind. As a practice, approaching each other that way, she says, quote, also reminds us that one or the other is in continual process, flux, emergence, and evolution. When we meet the mystery, we do not assume that we already know all there is to know. We can discover one another anew, over and over again. And this feels like a lovely, evocative, inspiring way to grow and nurture a relationship as a couple in a committed relationship. Imagine if we were more able, more often, when we meet and interact with one another. What if we treated one another with that kind of respect and even reverence as mystery? Instead, we so often close the door out of fear and deny the mystery and vilify or dehumanize other people. This is the mistake that gets made in that story, In the Dark, by Kate Hoffler and Corinna Loikon, that we just experienced a little while ago. The first group of people perceives another group as inhabiting a scary dark, so they must be witches, complete with brooms and a black cat. Oh, they've got a black cat. There must be witches. But after a storm, and those what seem to be cloaks and brooms get blown around, what they find in the trees aren't cloaks and brooms, but kites. Kites in the shape of birds. Things were found. Things that made our words feel caught in trees. That kind of sorry. They've just been open to changing their minds, to reconsidering, to taking in more. They've been open to feeling some remorse, some sorry over it. And feeling that sorry, the people repair the kites and return them to the other folks in the woods, and they celebrate creativity and play and light together. Thankfully, these are not people wedded to hate. They were able to let go of what they thought they knew and realize the limits of their understanding. They were able to shift from fear and distrust to a practice of openness and wonder. They were able to lean into mystery and grow their humanity and their sense of morality. If you can't let go of the hate that giving into fear can breed, your humanity and your morality will wither. The theologian and teacher Howard Thurman says that for the strong, for the powerful, hate serves still another purpose. It becomes the cloak of moral justification for the doing of deeds which, under normal circumstances, would leave the individual or nation covered with shame and inner spiritual confusion. Let us not be mistaken. We must declare the truth that God requires of us that we make again and again an act of faith toward our fellow human beings. If this is not done, any discussion, even of love, is an empty echo among the barren hills of a desolate experience. So when Thurman says that God requires of us to make again and again an act of faith toward our fellow human beings, I'm wondering if the way to understand that is that we're to encounter one another as mystery. But if that person before you is being violent or hateful or hurtful, does that still make sense? Deborah Eden Tull recognizes that there are varying degrees to which we might find the practice of meeting one another as the mystery applicable and beneficial. In situations of abuse or violence or being dehumanized by another, you need to protect yourself. Being open or accepting isn't always safe. Tull admits that, as we've seen in recent politics, there are also people interested in forms of xenophobia and white supremacy with which there is no moral middle. But if hatred turns off morality, do we need to hang on to our sense of mystery and wonder in order for us to hang on to our moral sense? Just wondering what the relationships are. There's something that Abraham Joshua Heschel said that I've keep coming back to again and again. He said, I would say about individuals, an individual dies when he ceases to be surprised. I am surprised every morning that I see the sunshine again. When I see an act of evil, I am not accommodated. I do not accommodate myself to the violence that goes on everywhere. I'm still surprised. That's why I'm against it, why I can hope against it. We must learn how to be surprised, not to adjust ourselves. I am the most maladjusted person in society. Rabbi Heschel isn't using the word mystery here, experiencing mystery. Maybe that's a little different than being unaccommodated to evil or maladjusted to violence. But he is talking about encountering the world always open to the surprise of it. He's living so that he's surprised by violence, surprised by the sunrise. And that surprise does seem to engage his sense of morality and justice. Certainly, it is an ideal to be striven for, to encounter one another with a sense of mystery and wonder that helps us to give each other the space to freely be, to freely grow and change, to be creative and to be loving. To be on the mystery is to be open to admitting the limits of what we know, not as a fixed boundary, but as an opportunity to be drawn onward to new experiences of mystery and wonder, as well as an opportunity to work for peace and health, to soulfully move in the direction of justice and love, healthy relationship, mutual thriving. I guess mystery is still a mystery to me. May we all be inspired by mystery and wonder. May we be willing to let go of our reactive fearfulness and open ourselves to mystery and wonder and discovery. May doing so bring healing. May doing so bring peace. May experiences of mystery and wonder open our hearts, renew our spirits, and transform our lives. May it be so.